Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This hour is brought to you by Yuengling Traditional Lager, oldest brewery in America.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got 5 on.
They're not our main thoughts. They are our thoughts. And therefore, it is 5 on it.
I mean, some of them are our main thoughts, maybe.
Yeah, but usually our main stuff is at like 10.
Or 11. Or yeah. 1.
It just depends.
A reminder, coming up later today, we got Vinny Rattino joining us to talk about this Brewers-Cubs series. That's the next segment. And then after that, 1 o'clock, all Hades breaks loose.
Meat.
Russ Dorsey will be here. Vinny is the former major leaguer. He also even was with the White Sox organization and apparently appeared on the Score White Sox postgame show back in the day. So Vinny's a lot of fun. We're looking forward to talking to him.
Yeah, it should be a good time, but not as much fun as 5 on it, which is the highlight of my day every day.
Number one.
Well, this is a question that was on top of my mind after reading the Tribune's Paul Sullivan and his recent piece. And it's this. Should Cubs president of baseball operations Jed Hoyer make a trade for a starting pitcher now instead of waiting for the July 31st deadline?
Beat the rush.
Really?
Beat the rush.
Beat the rush.
There's going to be a rush. Do you agree there are way more buyers than sellers at this moment?
There's more buyers than sellers. He needs to beat the rush. We will not sing that to Jed Hoyer when he's on at 3.
Please do not do that. Or Nico Horner when he's on at 2:30.
Jed would have hung up on me if we had had a phone conversation 8 times already over the time that I've worked here.
That's fine. But this is an important question. Here's why this is important, Layla. Because we know, unlike a lot of other teams, some teams, but not all the other teams that are right now within striking distance of a playoff spot. The Cubs are in this to win it all. They're not in this to try to find a way to maybe make a push to get into the playoffs. The thing that could help the Cubs immediately right now the most and improve their odds of winning the World Series is adding a top flight, top of the rotation arm. So if you have an avenue to pull off something similar to what we saw Boston and San Francisco do, San Francisco said we're going for it, not just now but for the future. Every year they would come up a little short on the whole free agent thing,
and they're in the best division in baseball.
Yes, so you know what the competition is in the National League. It is a lot greater in the National League than it would be in, say, the American League. You know that you are an ace, a guy with a double-digit strikeouts per 9 away from being in serious World Series contention. You're already in World Series contention, but I'm saying make it more serious by being intentional with your actions right here, right now.
I love this idea. I just don't know if it's realistic. Aces don't grow on trees.
They don't.
And do you know what happens when you trade for one? It costs you the farm. And the Cubs already gave the farm to the Astros when they decided to trade for Kyle Tucker. So to speak, they gave up their most, I think, potential-filled movable prospect and barely movable when I consider Cam Smith and the group that went over to Houston. So that said, I just don't, like, look at the Garrett Crochet trade and all that the Red Sox had to give up in order to get him. That's how you trade for an ace. If you really want one, that's what's going to happen. I don't even know if they have the prospect capital to do that. So I think the more realistic situation for the Cubs is trading for a guy like, as everybody's mentioned, and I mean all the baseball scribes are onto it, which leads you to believe there's some information they're getting, the Sandy Alcantara discussion, where I know the ERA is not great, but I think a change of scenery probably benefits him there as well. Another name that has popped up that the Cubs just saw is Andrew Heaney. And I think given that you saw how he pitches at Wrigley, that wasn't bad. The Pittsburgh Pirates starter, I think he's pretty resurgent. He knows how to be on a playoff team. He has experience with the Rangers too. The ERA is 3.33 right now for 14 starts. So that might be a guy that you consider as well. I would love the concept of trading for an ace, but just trade for an ace is also like, we'll just get $1 million tomorrow. It's just a hard thing to do.
On the Alcantara thing specifically, it's not just that his numbers are down ERA-wise, where his ERA is closer to, well, it's actually 6.88 right now. That's bad. The whip is also bad. Worst in his career, 1.471. Also, the strikeouts per nine, down. They've been in decreasing the last couple of seasons, actually. So I look at his strikeout to walk ratio, 1.72. That does not play. You can't go out here, give up real assets for a guy that's just going to be your second or third best pitcher. They need a guy who is at least as good as Shota Imanaga. And Imanaga's good. When the Cubs put Imanaga on the mound, they win the majority of the time. And it's a super majority, by the way. That's what's got to happen.
Number two.
Which one of these offensive weapons do you expect to have the biggest impact on the Bears' offense this year? Second-year receiver Rome Odunze, rookie receiver Luther Burden III, or rookie tight end Colson Loveland? Which one of those three will have the best year?
Why are we even asking this question, I think, at this point? It comes down to two people, and that's, no offense to Luther Burden, that's just because of the priorities that are placed. When you're talking about a 10th overall pick and a 9th overall pick, it's going to be one of those two in Colson Loveland and Rome Odunze. I think one of the biggest questions facing the Bears offense is, how are you going to use Rome Odunze? Because we know how you're going to use Colson Loveland when you say that he reminds you of Sam LaPorta. We have some idea. But where does Rome fit into all of this? So I think that Colson Loveland, because you know what the defined role is and you know where Sam LaPorta fell into the top three of receivers for Detroit last year, it's probably him.
All right, so I'll rank these guys. It's going to be number one, Colson Loveland. Number two, Rome Odunze. And then number four, maybe number five, Luther Burden III. Because one thing is, I ain't seen Luther Burden III out on the field doing anything of late. I don't know what kind of impact he can have when he's going to be the one doing the most catch-up, if you will. We know that Colson Loveland is going to be prioritized. I could see a world in which Colson Loveland gets more targets and catches than Rome Odunze, but Rome Odunze gets more touchdowns than Colson Loveland. But I think Colson Loveland is going to be critical because, as you said, Layla, we actually have a blueprint for how he'll probably be used because of the existence of Sam LaPorta in the Detroit Lions offense in years past.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out where Rome is in all of this. Do you guys have an idea visually where he would be? Like, can you visualize his role in this already? I cannot.
I think it can be matchup based for him specifically.
And when I say that, it's not like he's not starting. I'm not saying he's not playing in the offense. I'm just saying I don't know what piece he fits in at.
It'll be interesting because I want to see if DJ Moore takes on a role more like Amon-Ra St. Brown. And then if Odunze is left with like that Jameson Williams role. I don't know. I don't want to put like everything X equals Y equals Z equals. That's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm just saying, knowing that the running game might not be as spectacular, shall we say, as we once thought it could be, they're going to be leaning on a lot of short things, I think, with DJ Moore specifically, but also with Colson Loveland. And maybe that's where Luther Burden III, you know, plays a role because he's doing a lot of short stuff and then creating after the catch.
A lot of people are talking about the fact that both Loveland and Burden are injured, and I understand that part of it, but I think the expectation for Loveland to be a part of this from game one is still very much the case. So
I have a bonus question here before we go to our third question. Is Loveland already tight end one? Has he already surpassed Cole Kmet as the first tight end?
Conceptually, when the coach says he reminds him of Sam LaPorta, it just leads me to believe that's how he wants to use him. I don't necessarily know that he is already.
No, I don't think he's tight end one until he gets on the field and does stuff. Can't happen. I know what I have out there when you talk about the current tight end one that's coming back from a season ago and had a very bad season. Probably feels like he has a lot to prove. Local boy done good, Cole Kmet.
Bonus aside to this, do you know how nice it is? Because a lot of people have said, that Ben Johnson sounds like Matt Nagy. And I understand they both have a drawl. Maybe that's it, the Philly drawl. The Pennsylvania drawl is a little different from the North Carolina drawl. But when it comes to them sounding similar in content, No. Do you know what it is like to try to ask Matt Nagy an offensive scheme question? The fact that Ben Johnson's like, yeah, he reminds me of Sam LaPorta, and you have an idea of how that person is going to be used and that scheme, but like you still have an idea. Do you know how refreshing and nice that is out of the head coach? Do you?
It's just nice to have a plan.
Number three.
It was revealed that Bulls Vice President of Basketball Operations Arturis Karnišovas will not be speaking to the media the night of the NBA draft. Instead, GM Mark Eversley will take his place. The question is, does this matter at all?
I don't think so necessarily, because I actually want to hear more from Mark Eversley anyway, since he is one of the executives in charge. I would like to hear more from both of them overall throughout the course of the season. I like that we know what the plan is going to be as well. So I just need somebody to talk and tell me the why.
Oh, you want the why?
I'm trying to find the whys. That didn't change.
Okay, listen. When I first saw that, I was like, man, AK, face the music. But also, Mark Eversley is the general manager of the Chicago Bulls. And if this is the role they want to put him in on draft night, I'm not terribly upset about it. I'm not terribly upset about anything because I've already kind of accepted the fate of this Bulls team regardless of who they draft, unless they make some blockbuster trade on draft night. Now, if they make some type of trade, I want to hear from the guy who orchestrated the trade. I doubt that was Mark Eversley. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, but if he's it's just a standard, part of it, though.
If it's standard draft procedure, Mark Eversley is fine.
So yeah. I have a take that, if I'm correct, I'm going to pull it back and play it a bunch, and if not, it's lost in the ether forever. Are we sure Arturis Karnišovas will be with the Bulls before next year? Because Denver has a GM opening. They haven't hired anyone yet.
You know, we've all thrown it out there just because of resume and proximity and all of that. It's kind of like throwing out Billy Donovan with the Knicks because he's got a history in New York. But there hasn't been any discussion. Like, it's been people here and there, like, throwing it out there, but other than that, it never seems to go anywhere.
Robbie, on top of that, what has Arturis Karnišovas done since he left Denver that says, I deserve the chance to work with Nikola Jokic and make sure he's back to contending before his career is over?
Well, he scouted Jokic, though.
Besides that awesome Giddy trade, it was just like, you know, he has relationships in Denver that can work.
So he scouted Jokic.
I'm just looking over there at Robbie, and he knows.
I had to throw that in.
I'm not
even acknowledging it.
Listen, I'll use this opportunity, even though it's not part of the question. If Josh Giddey makes $30 million, y'all don't want to hear from me the day after that.
No, right? But the whole NBA truth that, like, there's only so many teams that can afford that individual and want to pay him, and that he will find a job because of it, that is an NBA truth.
That man better sign an offer sheet, or else $20 million should be what he makes. Or less. He better sign an offer sheet. If no one, simple supply and demand. If no one wants to pay him a lot of money, why are you paying him a lot of money? It's pretty simple.
Number four.
Who do you think is the better scrappy white dude? Pacers guard TJ McConnell or Thunder guard Alex Caruso?
It's still Alex Caruso.
Why?
The end.
No, it's not the end. That's only the beginning because it's TJ McConnell. Let me tell you why. Because
wait, you asked me a question, then you proceeded to answer the question you asked.
I did.
And then you proceeded to take the segment.
Yes.
All right. Then I'll take back the segment after you say whatever you're going to say here that I'm not going to listen to.
What? TJ McConnell, I did listen to what you said. I just said you were wrong. TJ McConnell can create both on offense and defense. Alex Caruso is not a creator. He does not create. He creates problems. That's about it. Guess what? TJ McConnell creates problems on offense and defense because if you put the ball in his hands, he can not only find his teammates and create lots and lots of assists and also get the steals and create the deflections that Alex Caruso does. He can also hit game winners over Carmelo Anthony for a team destined to win less than 20 games. He did that, by the way, with the Philadelphia 76ers when Carmelo Anthony was still in New York and at his height.
Show me your team's best player. And Alex Caruso will take them on as a defensive assignment because he doesn't care. Also, Alex Caruso has more of a resume, even though TJ McConnell did play for the Sixers. Alex Caruso has shown why the best teams want him as a defensive specialist, and not just that, but when he's feeling it, he will pull up for a three or two, and that's how you know you're probably winning the ball game. But also, he did create offense out of necessity on the Bulls team when they needed him to, so he can be flexible. Additionally, didn't a lot of people say that Alex, including Charles Barkley, after game four that the reason the Thunder won that game in Indianapolis was because of Alex Caruso. On your finals team, you have to have a guy who you say, glad we called that guy. A la Steve Buscemi and Billy Madison. Alex Caruso is that man.
The series would be over if TJ McConnell wasn't playing in it.
And you know what I love doing? Creating problems. So of course I love Alex Caruso.
Again, this series would be over. Now, to your credit, I will give you this. Nikola Jokic, shut down by Alex Caruso. Or at least severely stunted by Alex Caruso in a big spot in Game 7. I'll give you that. But TJ McConnell's just more fun to watch. He's more
fun.
He's more fun to watch. He's got the ball in his hands, and he dribbles. He goes baseline. He cuts around like he's Steve Nash circa the 10 seconds or less Suns.
Steve Nash was an MVP of the league.
I know. I said circa. He does it as if he was, and then goes around the corner. If you want to give him the shot, he'll make the shot. If you don't, he'll find somebody else who can dunk it.
Five on it. Number five.
So I'm looking at the weather app right now. Things are finally getting hot in Chicago, thank God. The high is 87 today, but next week, Saturday, high of 95.
I think that's this Saturday.
This Saturday, high of 95. Sunday, high of 96. Monday and Tuesday, high of 95. So a lot of people want to go in the water. But where are we going in the water? Take number five, beach or pool? Which one do you prefer?
All right, I know that we're next to a fabulous body of water that gives us life and water and resources and provides other tributaries for guys like Chonkosaurus.
I like your use of tributaries.
It's true, but give me the pool. You can put one anywhere. You don't need a lake or anything special or geographic to have a pool. All you need is the body of water itself that you've built and the people around it. And that pool can be as chill as you need it to be, or it can be as lit as you need it to be, depending on the pool you want to go to in this city, for example. You know, not a lot of things are that flexible. Not a lot of things are that choose-your-own-adventure. But a pool tends to be. A pool can be whatever you need it to be. A source of relaxation or a party. Give me the pool.
I could see us holding hands. Walking on the beach with our toes in the sand. I could see us on the countryside. Sitting on the grass, laying side by side. Famous words that were made famous by one Justin Timberlake in the 2006 My Love. But let me tell you something, Justin. I'd rather not have to worry about washing that sand off my feet. It's pool all day. I don't mind the beach, but getting sand out of everything and having to find like the little shower before you go back to your car, that's annoying. The beach is great, but the pool is superior. One of the reasons the pool is superior, there are probably few things that I enjoy more than going to a pool with a walk-up bar in the middle of the pool. Let me tell you something.
Oh,
you have not lived. If you haven't been to the swim-up bar, you have not lived. Like, oh, I would like a drink, but I really don't feel like getting out of the water. Oh, I don't have to leave the water. I just go up to the pull-up bar and just like, what? Pina colada, whatever you want. Whatever you want.
As somebody who's not very tall, I love a good shallow pool. You know, everybody knows what you're doing. That pool's not for diving or Olympic laps or something. It's there to chill in.
What's the perfect height for the pool?
For me, it's like 3 feet.
3 feet? I can't even... No, I need to get like chest high. It's got to be, what, 4.5?
For me, that is...
5 feet. 5 feet's probably good. 5 feet would be too much for you, wouldn't it?
No, then you're 5 feet and I... No,
yeah,
no, I can't.
Your nose is underwater.
My nose is underwater.
Yeah, that's not good. Okay, 4.5. Well, 4.5 feet is a good size. But no, I think the pool wins easily over the beach.
I disagree completely.
Well, that's okay.
The beach is more versatile. You have. If you want to play volleyball with some friends, you can do that. If you want to play slam ball, you can do that.
I will put the volleyball net up at the halfway point of the pool, and we'll play volleyball inside the pool.
Also, majority of pools is just pee, so I don't want any part of that. I don't want that. I know what people do.
Wait, Robbie, what do you think people are doing when you're in the lake?
But it's a lake. There's so much more, like, saturation that happens there. We all know what happens in the pool. Everyone does it. We all know.
My vote is for the pool because anytime you're doing public swimming, it's never going to be sanitary. But there's chlorine in the pool. I'm going with the
pool.
Yeah,
there's, and plus, I like the no kids allowed pool, the adult pool.
Yeah.
Also, the beach is just so much, anyone can walk up to it. The pool, you got to know a friend who knows a guy. You have to know someone at an apartment building. It's much harder.
Oh, so this is about you not having enough power. I got you.
Yeah.
It's about access.
I knew that things were going well at my pool whenever like half of the people I would see on a regular basis didn't actually go to, like, live in my building.
Exactly.
That's when I realized I was at a party pool. And that's when your life changes for the better or worse. You just have to make the decision. We have more to come here on Raheemy and Harris on the Score. Coming up next is our friend, former major leaguer, Brewers analyst for their network, Vinny Rotino, will join us to talk Cubs and Brewers and more. That's next on The Score.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
2-2, two outs, two on, and he got him! McGill with the strikeout! The ball game is over and the Brewers win! The Brewers take 3 out of 4 from the Cardinals. They win on Father's Day, and Trevor McGill walking the tightrope with 3 consecutive strikeouts to get to the finish line.
That is FanDuel Sports Network in Milwaukee. Brian Anderson on the call because the Cubs are getting ready for a 3-game set with the Brewers. So we go out to our Circa Resort and Casino hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. He also joins us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. It is Vinny Rotino, the analyst for the FanDuel Sports Network, joining us on Rahimi and Harris. Vinny, good to see you again. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you, Layla. Marshall, how are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're well. We are very excited for this series. A lot of good pitching, especially tomorrow night's matchup. But really, kind of a check-in on what the division is looking like, because all of a sudden, outside of the Pirates, you've got 4 teams very much believing that they are in the mix for a playoff spot. The Cubs, of course, in control. And Vinny, I'm curious as to how you see this race right now in the National League Central through that Brewers lens.
Through the Brewers lens, I mean, you're looking up in that lens, through that lens, at the Chicago Cubs, which is something that the Brewers have not grown accustomed to the last several years, right? I mean, the Cubs have been chasing the Brewers, and the tables have turned this season. But look, the Brewers have played well as of late, so they're one of the hottest teams in baseball since May 18th. So they really had a tough time struggling to score runs early on in May, and then since then they have been scoring runs, something that I've noticed that the Cubs haven't been doing as of late since Memorial Day for them. So, yeah, but they have continued to win. So they're a team, and that's what Craig Counsell brings to the table for you guys. And that, I think that's what the division is kind of not necessarily intimidated by, but that's what they're looking at is a Cubs team that is now a complete team that can win in multiple different kinds of ways. Not scoring runs, but yet they're still pitching really well, base running exceptionally well, playing great defense. And again, that's what Craig Counsell brings to the table. So although the Reds, the Brewers, and the Cardinals, I think the Cardinals are fading, guys. I really do. I don't see a lot of depth there just in terms of how they have won. But the Reds are certainly in it with their starting pitching. But yeah, I think the rest of the division is a little bit probably worried that the Cubs now are a complete team. Not a lot of holes in that lineup, not a lot of holes in terms of how they're playing defense and base running. I would say you guys are potentially going to be in trouble if there is another injury to your starting staff. It's going to be interesting to see what the Cubs do and Jed Hoyer does at the trade deadline.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's been the discussion, Vinny, is the need for more starting pitching. Everybody can use it, but especially here. I want to go back to what you said, though, about Craig Counsell, because we've talked about how in his first season, maybe that was even too much expectation out of us, you know, looking at what he was immediately going to bring. He is a know your personnel guy. We've talked a lot about just his eye for bullpen talent, for example, the Cubs bullpen really coming through in ways that we haven't seen in years for this team. You know, and you touched on it after covering him for years, you know, how did you see that evolve? Like him managing in different ways and knowing who's on his team and how to deploy people and just use them in scenarios really year to year.
Well, so he is just an exceptional talent evaluator in general. Now, I don't think his role was ever, you know, labeled a scout after he got done playing. I know he was in the front office, though, with Doug Melvin before he took over as the Brewers manager for Ron Renneke back in 2016. So I think actually he's 2015. But so he has an exceptional eye for talent. He was a player that always had to pay attention in order to get the best out of his ability and to play winning baseball. He always had to pay attention to the little minute details. And so he was managing when he was playing, essentially, right? And he could understand, like, what's the best matchup for this guy? Where does this guy fit? What's his best role? He has a knack and an eye for that that others just don't. And he kind of deployed the bullpen in ways as to which it made each guy successful. And you guys know, once a guy has some success in the bullpen and tastes some success, I mean, this goes for anything in baseball, any role that you're playing, whether it's a position player, a bench guy, or a pitcher, but mostly it matters a great deal for bullpen guys because it is such a volatile job, right? I mean, if you give up a three-run home run, you lose your team the game, and you have to sit on that for 4 days until you can get back out there. So he has a knack for it, an eye for it, and he knows how to deploy guys to give them success, and all of a sudden they're pitching with a lot of confidence. Pat Murphy's doing the same thing here in Milwaukee. He learned from Counts. He's got that same exact kind of knack and feel. Council has that, and they've got the personnel to do it too. I think he's probably got some influence on the front office as to, you know, what kinds of guys that he wants to acquire as well.
Vinny Rotino, the Brewers analyst for the FanDuel Sports Network, talking to us here on Raheem Harris ahead of the series opener tonight between the Brewers and the Cubs, a big three-game set for both teams. I want to give you some stats here because I think people might not understand just how closely these two teams have been playing alongside each other over the last month, right? Because over the last month, the Cubs have played 25 games. The Brewers have played one more, 26. The Cubs, 115 runs scored. The Brewers, 118 runs scored. Looking at the team slash lines, the Cubs hitting 255, the Brewers 251, the Cubs with a 311 on base percentage, the Brewers with a 327 on base percentage, and then slugging, the Cubs at 423, the Brewers at 401. So they seem to be very similar, and the Brewers 18-11 over that time. Is it just as simple as the Brewers have been hitting more, or is there something else that you see with why the Brewers have been able to put together this last month?
The offense runs through Christian Yelich, guys. I mean, it really does. There was a scare there where he got hit in the hand by Ranger Suarez of the Phillies, and up and in, lefty-on-lefty matchup, up and in fastball. He got hit on the bottom hand. They took x-rays. His wrist was not broken. He continued to play. He actually hit a home run the next day. Swollen a little bit. Went ahead and took a couple days off. Went back in the lineup. Slid awkwardly on that right wrist. Got x-rays again. X-rays again were negative. So he took another couple of days and then went back in, hit a home run his last game against the Cardinals and had three hits. So it does run through Christian Yelich. Now, if he's hot, you guys are going to have a tough time keeping runs off the board against the Milwaukee Brewers because they are so scrappy. You have guys like Sal Frelick at the top of the lineup that are going to get on base. And when Christian Yelich is swinging such a dangerous bat, the pitching staff of the opposing team, they know it. They feel it. You guys remember it from 18 and 19, right, when nobody in the league could get him out, especially the Cubs. I remember as a scout, so I scouted after I was done playing. I watched him at Wrigley Field, and dare I say, American Family Field South. I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for saying that.
Oh, no, you can't say that.
You cannot say that. I get it. So I can't wait for Cubs fans to tweet at me right now. But you guys call it you call it Wrigley North, so that's okay. But when he is swinging the bat, so dangerous to really navigate through the Brewers lineup, and it deepens the lineup as well. It makes guys like Jackson Churio better. It makes guys like William Contreras better, Rhys Hoskins better when Christian Yelich is swinging the bat. So if that's the case, watch out for the Crew. I do think this is going to be such an evenly matched series. I really do. These are going to be a fun three games, especially with the pitching matchups that are on the mound. Jacob Mizorowski, one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball, made his major league debut. Five innings, no hits, was throwing 102, sitting pretty much 100 to 102 mile per hour with a fastball with a couple of exploding breaking balls. He still really is scratching the surface as to what he can do. He reminds me of what Kerry Wood did when he came to the big leagues right away. It really is that kind of electric stuff. So this is going to be a really fun series, really evenly matched series, and hopefully a well-played series by both teams.
Yeah, Vinny, I was surprised at the turn of events that I feel like the last 4 or 5 days have had for the Brewers. When you consider, number one, they took 3 of 4 from the Cardinals. That was a statement-making series just among them two in the division, you know, when it came to like standings between those two teams. And then there was the Aaron Civale discussion, which turned into him going to the White Sox and Andrew Vaughn being traded to the Brewers organization. And then you have, on top of that, the call-up of Jacob Mizorowski, who easily fits into the starting rotation, to say the very least. Like, how do you describe all of the events that took place over the last several days for this team?
Well, this is just it's a shot in the arm, right? When you add a prospect of that caliber, like Jacob Mizorowski, and then he performs, right? So the question around Jacob was the fact that, couldn't he throw strikes? And if not, he's going to be a bullpen arm for the remainder of his career. He came out, and I think 8 out of the first 12 pitches were strikes. And again, it was just amazing, electric. I can't even describe how good the stuff was. And so if that kind of stuff is in the zone, he is going to be a staple in this Brewers rotation for the next 6 years, unless they extend him, which they, you know, I haven't heard discussions around that, but that is going to be problems for the rest of the NL Central, the rest of the league, quite frankly. And so when you get a guy like that, shot in the arm, when you, yeah, you have some, there's a little controversy there with Aaron Savali. They, you know, kind of obliged him in trading him to the White Sox in order to go ahead and hopefully finish out his year, and so he can become a free agent, and he'll sign like a better deal because he's not in the bullpen with the Brewers. So there was a little controversy there. The other controversy was your old friend Wilson Contreras in running into, but he's playing first base and he steps into the line, and Caleb Durbin bowls him over. Actually, Durbin, I think, lost that battle because Wilson is such a bull at first base. Dare I say bully. I mean, he was kind of bullying the Brewers there in game 3. There was some controversy around there. They lost that game, but then finished off that series and winning 3 out of 4. And so, yes, I think all of that controversy, a little bit of drama, and then answering back in game 4 and winning, that gives them some momentum going into this Cubs series. This is the biggest series of the year for the Milwaukee Brewers. They have to come out and they have to win this series in order for them to stay kind of on pace with this really strong Cubs roster.
Vinny Rotino, we always like to have you on. You can check out his jersey wall behind him on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. And before we let you go, I know I've asked you about your jerseys before, but there's a new prop that has been added, and not a prop. I think it means something very meaningful to you. What is the bottle that is to your left, to the viewer's right in the frame here?
So this, I won that at Brewers Fantasy Camp. So if any Cubs fans out there want to have a great time at Brewers Fantasy Camp, come on down and you can join us for Club 101. Yeah. So anyway, that's not really that sentimental, actually. It's a signed bottle.
It's a nice looking prop.
Yeah, it's got all these autographs on it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I use it to, I don't know why. Maybe I'm going to move that here. But
no.
Yeah, that's not a lot of it, Layla.
Vinny Rotino has led a fun baseball life, and we like asking him about it because he's intersected with Chicago a few different ways. So, Vinny, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to this series as much as you do.
Thanks, Vinny.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, have a good day.
That was Vinny Rotino. He is the analyst for the FanDuel Network, where the Brewers play in Milwaukee. He also, like I mentioned, was with the White Sox organization for a minute, and also at one point appeared on the 670 The Score postgame show whenever he played with the Cleveland, I think at the time they were the Indians still. Yeah.
That tracks, because he's of a certain age, yes.
Yes. I don't think Vinny would care about that, but he's always a good baseball listen, that's for sure. So our thanks to Vinny. I titled the next segment, Dramatic Trades.
Wow.
Because that's exactly what happened. So let's compare two of the most dramatic trades that we've seen in the past 5 years that happened in the past few months.
That's dramatic.
On the Score.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Third base is my position. It's what I've played. I don't know what their plans are. Like, I know we had a conversation. I made it clear kind of what my desires were. And yeah, whatever happens from here, I don't know.
Yeah, Rafael Devers tried to tell him, didn't he? Like, he tried. He was asked by the Boston media, who's not afraid of asking questions, and he told people, and now he is a San Francisco Giant. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score, and this is a segment I call Dramatic Trades because it was birthed from a five-on-a question that we had in the show. Should we do the thing? Robbie, would you like to ask the question? I think you should ask the question.
I don't know if he has that.
I have it in my hand. I'll do it. Can I pretend to be Robbie?
Of course.
Hi, I love the Detroit Tigers and have a necessary love for basketball players who deserve some but not all. And I care way too much about the Lions at times.
What player do I love the most?
On
Josh
the Lions?
Giddey?
Yeah, I like Josh Giddey. Yeah, he's good. What else about me? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
He has an incorrect take about pools versus beaches.
And, but he also, he loves a lot of sports, and sometimes his sports love is misplaced, like when there's too much on the side for Detroit.
The thing is, everyone pees in pools, and I just want to acknowledge that. People just pee in the pool. I don't like that.
I am Robbie Triano, and my question is, Red Sox chief baseball officer Craig Breslow is facing criticism for trading slugger Rafael Devers to the Giants. Was trading Devers a mistake on the level of Mavericks general manager Nico Harrison trading star guard Luka Doncic to the Lakers, or is this an apples-to-oranges comparison? They are not the same. Why are they not the same? Because of what we just played. There were many times where the question was asked and posed to Rafael Devers, and he told you the source of his discontent. On a team that should be contending in Boston, on a team that wanted Alex Bregman as an addition to that team because they were displeased with how superstars who had grown up in that franchise, a la Mookie Betts, were traded away. So what was their response? To make sure that Devers, a player who had been with the organization since he was a teenager, was going to not only be rewarded as such, but was going to be considered a cornerstone of the franchise. What happened to Luka Doncic was underneath the cloak of night. It was clandestine. If he had shopped into the rest of the league, he might have gotten, I don't know, Desmond Bane type of picks. For Luka Doncic, I'll say it as long as it's a problem. But are the two the same? No. One you saw coming, one you did not.
I don't know that I saw the Rafael Devers trade coming. Here's why. Because he had figured it out. He was being as productive as he's been his entire career, well on his way to being an all-star starter at designated hitter in the American League. And the Red Sox had won five games in a row and are now holding down the final wildcard spot in the American League. So it didn't seem like that was where they needed to break, is to trade arguably their best offensive player. I will say this. At least the Mavericks got back a future Hall of Famer in Anthony Davis. I don't know that when all is said and done, the Red Sox will have gotten back a future Hall of Famer. I could argue that the chances of that are very unlikely. So that's another big difference here. But the other thing is, the things that were communicated by the frustrated player versus a team that was frustrated with its player. That's the other thing that's different between these two trades. But
well, and also the statements about the team supposedly being frustrated with its player were said hastily and after the fact, after the rest of the league pointed out that it was a horrible trade, almost as though it was an excuse for their decision.
Also, at least with the Red Sox situation, it was front and center. Everyone knew about the players' frustrations, and they were legitimized not only by, you could say, teammates, but also people in the media, former baseball players. They would tell you, yeah, it's not fun to ask someone to switch positions mid-season when they haven't had any training there. They don't want to embarrass themselves. And, of course, you could also take what happens in the field with you to the plate. Rafael Devers just wanted to avoid all of that. He said, you told me I was your cornerstone. Meanwhile, I never saw him drinking a beer and it getting taken out of his hand by someone from the front office. Also, that's
did
what
Rafael
happened to
Luka. Devers take his team to the World Series single-handedly?
No. But he did win a World Series. Yeah.
But I think both are true in that either way, there was some sort of willingness by one of the parties or team or player or both in these cases to move somebody. I think the more surprising thing was that the Red Sox decided that it was okay to part ways with him. That's the part that when you're trying to fight for everything you can in the AL East and you've got the Yankees at the top, you know exactly who your biggest rival is and what they're doing. to decide to get rid of somebody who was so powerful and so meaningful to their team.
This goes back to a bigger discussion about how teams are built, though, because we know his contract was large and long and had $250 million outstanding on it. I think this is as simple as the Red Sox looked around, said, well, what else do we have if we get rid of him? And what can we get back from him and not be under that contract anymore? This is not unlike what happened with Mookie Betts when they traded him away to the Dodgers, which I thought was ridiculous at the time. Still think it's ridiculous because that is a future Hall of Famer right there.
That extension now was so big at the time and now looks like a bargain. A mere 5 years later.
It's not unlike what the Cubs were not willing to give Bryce Harper, who told you his first choice was to go to the Cubs. So you have to be able to look into the future on that. And I think one of the reasons why we look at this Red Sox thing and they can say they're comfortable with it, who do they call up in the meantime? The number one prospect in all of baseball in Roman Anthony. He's already gone deep, by the way. They're still rolling. They went from winning five in a row to taking the series opener with the Mariners yesterday. They've now won six in a row. And again, are firmly in the playoff hunt because they currently hold a playoff position with that final wild card spot.
The disconnect I had with this was also partially what we heard Craig Breslow say recently. You know, the former Cubs assistant general manager,
yeah,
who very publicly went over to Boston and now also has Theo Epstein back in the ownership group mix as another ear for all of this. And that's the part that makes me wonder how much Theo is involved, but also listen to what Craig Breslow had to say.
This is not the outcome that we had expected, and it's forced me to reflect on the interactions that I've had, not just with Rafi, but with other players and opportunities to communicate differently. You know, anytime you get to this point where, as Sam said, you reach an inflection point and you fail to reach alignment, you know, I need to own things that I could have done better. You know, and I don't know if this outcome would have played out any differently. You know, I think that there's a decent chance that it wouldn't have, but I absolutely need to have the humility to think back on the interactions and figure out what I could have done better.
I appreciate him saying that, but simply by the simple action of acquiring Alex Bregman, you knew you were going to have an issue.
There should have been a deep, deep, deep discussion about what this meant for the team with your star cornerstone player before you pulled the trigger, or when that trigger was pulled, before it was leaked to the media, breaking news, this is what happened. He's got to find out from you, not from someone else, that Alex Bregman is headed to Boston.
I know just the person who might be interested in joining this conversation.
Who would that be?
I see him sitting in the background. He is here after getting here via maybe going outside and then going back inside. It is Russ Dorsey from, of course, Yahoo Sports and Apple TV. The baseball man himself will join us next in studio on Raheemy and Harris on The Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.